Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Newborn Libertarian. This is your host, Kim, and of course, your usual co-host, the awesome man, Christian. How are you doing today, Christian?
I'm doing great, and I don't know how you managed to snag this guest.
Oh, well, I just harassed him a lot via email over and over again, and our host is Mark Clare from the Lions of Liberty podcast. How are you doing today, Mark?
I'm doing great, guys, and no reason to make me sound more important than I actually am. I'm not hard to track down at all, really.
Yes,
It took, like, one email. I think I even suggested, hey, why don't I come on the show?
Yes, but then, you know, I also stalk him all over his forum on Facebook, and, you know, that's just what I do, because it's fun. And he's also a nice, friendly human being, so it's
well,
not
we,
like
we
he...
We need stalkers out there, because without stalkers, I'll have no idea that people are actually listening to the show or anything like that, so and if you don't got a stalker or two, you're not doing something, you're doing something wrong.
And I, you know, I mainly listen to your podcast, because I really love the Rand Plus... Pluses and Minuses podcast. That was always my favorite.
Oh, awesome, yeah. That was that's a feature that has sadly died down with the death of Rand's political, or not his political campaign, but his presidential campaign, at least his current one. But that was a fun little ditty we did now and again. So, you know, it's just one of the many experimental formats that we work with, because we don't want to get bored, we don't want listeners to get bored, and so we try to keep mixing things up.
But as we normally do when we have guests on, I would like to ask about, before you became a libertarian, unless you just came out of the womb a libertarian, I'm not sure, and just let you know, this is a very informal podcast, so if you are the kind to let any weird words out or any curse words out, you can do that, or if you want to be informal, you can also do that, but...
I've been known to say some weird things now and again.
Well, libertarians that don't say weird things, come on, come on. It's just, it's a given. But if you were maybe anything before you were libertarian, just give us your journey into libertarianism, if you can. And
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say I was, I guess I was raised in what you might call a sort of a right-wing Republican household. I wouldn't call my dad, like, a bloodthirsty neocon or anything like that. But he was in the military, now he's in the Air Force, and... he just always kind of talked about small government when I was growing up. I don't think it really got too in-depth into why, quote-unquote, small was better than, quote-unquote, big. It was just kind of the company line. So I guess I was sort of Republican, but I also remember, I remember always kind of questioning things a little bit. You know, I used to listen to talk radio because I would drive with my dad all the time, and that's what he would listen to. And I actually found this stuff interesting even as a teenager. So I guess I was weird from the beginning. While everyone else was, you know, listening to music and planning trips to Woodstock, I'm sitting in the car listening to AM radio. Could have been red flag number one right there. But basically, I started to you know, I would question things. You know, when I'd be listening to some politician or some radio host to go on a rant about something, I would always stop in the middle and ask my dad, wait, well, why did he say that? Well, this doesn't make sense. I mean, I really, like, wouldn't just let things pass me by if somebody said something that didn't make sense to me. So I think even when I was still in a sort of an indoctrinated state, when I was still sort of, you know, trapped in this, yeah, I'm a Republican because I grew up a Republican mindset, I still like to think I always sort of questioned things, and that's something that my parents told me I was always doing, you know, from the beginning. I would never just, probably to the point of extreme annoyance, I would always just question why I was being told to do anything, whether it was from my parents, from my teachers, or from the pundits on radio and TV. So I think this questioning thing was always a big part of me, but that was kind of my pre-liberty beliefs, I guess you would call them.
That sounds kind of eerily similar to my life. I remember riding in the car with my grandpa, who still watches Fox News and yells at Obama whenever they show his face on some Fox channel or claps along to Bill O'Reilly. But I remember listening to AM talk radio in the car when we take long road trips, and he'd always say, yeah, or it's always, you know, towing the party line, so to speak. So my next question for you is, you know, there's been a lot, I think there's been a lot of interest in libertarianism coming up, or that has come up throughout the last few months, it's really starting to take center stage. What was the basis for you kind of starting your podcast and reaching out? And do you have a specific style that you try to go for? Do you try to reach new people? And when you do try to reach new people, how do you like to bring them in?
Well, yeah, that's a lot of question to unpack there, but we can do it all because we got the time. But I mean, I think before I get too deep into the podcast itself, I mean, it took me some time, I guess, to get from, you know, from a point of thinking differently to a point of, I guess, actually acting on it. Because I think that I started to veer away from that sort of Republican, small government, whatever mindset pretty early on, actually, probably like 15 years ago, like before even Ron Paul ran for president. I was reading his columns because a good friend of mine told me about him. A good friend of mine who was a page, he's one of our contributors to our show, actually, Howie. He was a page, a congressional page in high school, and he actually met Ron Paul, and he would tell me about this guy. He's like, yeah, there's this one guy, Ron Paul. He really he used to talk to me about things, that he used to look at things in a totally different way, and I was intrigued by that. So I started reading this guy's column probably 6 or 7 years before he even ran for president. So when he actually ran for president, I was like, wait a minute, that guy who's like obscure column I've been reading this whole time? So, I mean, that really got me to listen to Ron Paul more, because I wasn't really like, you know, a hardcore libertarian. I just knew that I really rejected the Republican and Democrat sort of paradigm. I didn't like it, and that's about as far as my sort of beliefs went. But I think when Ron Paul went to run for president and started being outspoken about things on a national stage, things that I started to become passionate about as well, whether it's our foreign policy or the war on drugs, that's when I started to speak out more. And I don't even mean speak out in the sense of the podcast, but speak out just with my friends, for starters. I mean, the Lions of Liberty, it's not just me, it's a group of friends of mine, and I know, I mean, just speaking to them is where really this stuff started to grow in the first place. Because, you know, before that, my beliefs were kind of just held to myself. It was, I would read something and think, oh, this makes me mad, and that's as far as it goes. I wouldn't tell anybody else about it. I wouldn't spread the word. So I think in many ways, Ron Paul sort of passionately doing that on the national stage inspired me to just talk about it in my own life. But even that was years before I actually just up and did the podcast. That kind of just came about because I was a fan of podcasts. We started the website Lions of Liberty as sort of our home base for all our ideas, but it was all just, you know, written articles and columns and that sort of thing for many years before one day I just said, okay, well, I like podcasts, and I think that's probably what I should do. So I just kind of did one. But and to answer your question about kind of, you know, drawing in new people or what have you, it's kind of a tough one because, yeah, that is the absolute goal of everything I do, is to draw in new people. But I also want to, I don't know, I guess sort of help steer things in the right direction. I think there's a lot of confusion, a lot of angst, you might even say, in the libertarian movement. I think there's a lot of people kind of flailing about all over the place. A lot of people have good intentions. A lot of people have good ideas. But I think that things are kind of unorganized intellectually, and I'm not claiming to be any sort of genius in this area, but I do think that focusing on the intellectual, philosophical side of things is extremely important, because if you don't really know the what, why, and how of what you believe in, well, then, you know, you're probably going to end up advocating policies that are actually diverging from each other, you know, down the road. So if libertarians got into quote-unquote power tomorrow, I don't know if we really would be as all on the same page as we think we might be right now. So that's kind of the focus, but I do try to attempt to present things in a way that new people might be inclined to listen to it. And whether or not I'm successful with that is up in the air, but that's kind of the goal. I mean, I want to have the kind of conversation I might hear on a what you might call a nerdier type of interview, a nerdier type of podcast, a more intellectual program, like the type of stuff Tom Woods does, and he does great interviews, but a lot of those interviews I couldn't share with my, I guess, quote-unquote normal friends, you might say. So I want to try to translate a lot of those conversations into, I guess, just a more of a casual, relaxed kind of a chat atmosphere, and that's kind of what we're going with, you know. The results may vary depending on user experience, but that's sort of the aim.
I think that makes sense. Like, you mentioned how you got to be philosophically sound when you go up on the stage to advance the concepts of liberty, or you got to be organized so you know the what, why, and how, and what you're really talking about. Otherwise, I guess you end up like the Gary Stoppo and trying to force a Jewish baker to bake a Nazi cake.
Exactly.
Nazi cake. Oh, my gosh.
That's just there was like a meme that went around of just, it was just like a picture of a Nazi cake and said like Gary Johnson 2016, just bake the damn cake.
For well, one,
I'm not gonna let you guys pass over the new word I invented called the Gary Stoppo.
Yeah, I was like, that's nice, Gary Stoppo.
You know, it's like, what do? I, if I applaud it too much, it seems like I'm an anti-Gary guy, and I mean, I kind of am, to be honest. But I'm not anti-Gary, but I probably share similar concerns to the ones, you know, you might have.
Yeah, after watching it or just seeing the kind of the highlights go around, I've kind of been a little bit more on board with Austin Peterson of more people, which is kind of a big leap for me. I didn't really endorse any of these guys, but hey, there's lots of avenues to advancing liberty, and you might as well have someone. When someone asks, well, who do you support, where you can say, well, I don't really support anyone, but you know, there's this guy maybe you should look at, and I can put his name forward. But
yeah, I mean, I got flack today in our private Facebook group, the Lions of Liberty Forum. Any of your listeners can just look up that in their search bar on Facebook. We let just about anybody in unless you look like an actual spam bot. But you know, I got a critique today. Somebody said that we sound like right wing libertarians or right wing conservatives. And I kind of pressed them. I was like, well, why do you think that? Because I don't think anyone that's listened to us for any amount of time would say that. But he said, well, you seem to say some good things about Austin Peterson, and he's really just a statist. And I mean, sure, maybe he is in many ways, depending on your definitions of these things. But when we're specifically talking about a libertarian debate, and I got three specific people up there, and guess what? Even if I might have philosophical differences with Austin Peterson in many ways, when I'm looking at the guy, he actually does understand the issues, and he understands the questions, and he understands a lot of the theory behind it, and he knows how to talk about these subjects, even if you might reach different conclusions than he does. And, you know, a lot of people don't like his attitude and don't like a lot of things he does, and they totally get all that. But, you know, when I'm actually comparing it to, say, Gary Johnson, I'm like, oh my God, he actually sounds a lot better than Gary Johnson here. So, you know, it's all about, you know, comparisons here, and you know, we have to judge everything on a scale. So I can say good things about Austin Peterson, and it doesn't even mean I'm an Austin Peterson supporter. It just means I watched the debate and I have some good things to say, you know. But a lot of people, especially, I'm not going to say especially in libertarian circles, because this probably happens in every political group. It just happens that this is the one that I'm participating in, so this is where I'm going to see it. But I mean, every group of this kind probably has people that take everything to extremes. And while I'm ideologically extreme in the sense that I believe in right and wrong, and I want to see truth and justice prevail to the very extreme ends that they can prevail to, I recognize that we live in a nuanced world, and you know, we have to look at things, certain things, whether they're specific, you know, laws or presidential candidates. We have to look at things through in sort of a prism that reflects reality in some way. So I think we can do that when it comes to looking at Austin Peterson, and I can say things that are okay about him. It doesn't mean that I'm an Austin Peterson supporter. It doesn't mean that I'm a statist.
Exactly. I'd have to agree with that, because I mean, if you're looking at, when we're talking about libertarian principles, yeah, I'd have to say Austin Peterson can definitely, I mean, he said them and said them well during the debate. So if I was to try to market that debate, the Stossel debate, to people, I'd say out of the three people, he's actually advocating them very well. And of course, people have already, anybody who's ever seen me on Facebook is probably going to see what my other opinions are about some of his more personal things. However, when we're talking about messaging and marketing to my friends, of course, Austin Peterson is pretty much advocating a lot of the principles we believe. Now, the only thing I would say about Gary Johnson, I've actually seen some more left-leaning libertarians that have more, I mean, I'd have to say Gary seems to be more of a marketing tool for getting libertarianism out to the mainstream to some people, because he seems to be appealing to the more Bernie Sanders side of things. And where I feel like that might be the angle he's actually trying to go for. And whereas I see that getting libertarians out into the open, I don't know if that's going to be detrimental in the end. It seems like a smart marketing ploy, but at the same time, I have no idea. I can see where they're angling with that. I guess it's sort of working, but in the end, it's like you're going to have to pull all these people in and actually slowly teach them the principles, but at the same time, man, I'm just going to have to say I would probably eat the shit out of that Nazi cake that people keep posting.
It looks delicious. Don't get me wrong. I will never advocate against eating a cake of any kind.
Yeah.
no matter what beliefs might have gone into it.
I mean, I'm the one who, I went to somebody's party and they had like a penis cake and everybody knows I'm a flaming lesbian and I would probably eat a penis cake. I would even eat the, you know, I would probably like, give me the penis. I would totally eat a penis cake. I'm just saying.
I'm a flaming heterosexual, and I would eat the penis cake. I mean, you know,
if it's made out of the right stuff, man.
And that, I can't wait till you guys clip off that quote and pump it out there on the internet in a big meme. Montclair, Alliance of Liberty. I would eat the penis cake.
Wait, are you talking about clipping things and pumping things in relation to penis?
This is the danger of doing podcasts and doing things on the internet where people can take your audio, as I do with every interview, and just manipulate it all around.
It's amusing. Are you yet regretting? You must be regretting that you wanted to be on this podcast. You already knew from my Facebook post, Mark, that I'm a very awkward human being.
And things might get raunchy.
Yeah.
You know what's super cool, though, is Mark just approved my... request.
Yeah, you like that? I did that live.
Just right now. And you know what I saw on the entry page? It showed me all my other friends who are in the group. And one of my friends that was in the group that I had no idea was a libertarian was my my senior year human geography teacher.
Wow.
Wait, just now?
Yeah. Is
it our Lions of Liberty group?
Yeah.
Your geography teacher?
My cultural geography teacher, yeah.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
And I had, you know what, it all makes sense now, because he was one of the first people that ever used the word libertarian in a conversation with me, and I think he was planting a seed there, and he was also the one, because I was also raised in kind of a neocon household, and he was the one that banged it in my head that Iraq didn't have weapons of mass destruction or participate in 9/11, so that's a big moment for me there.
Wow, this is crazy, and I'm hearing this revelation live. This is just mind-blowing.
You know, the thing that's not to take away from this tangent is that I was totally paying attention and not doing other things on the computer while we were having the conversation.
Oh, of course. That's all right.
We're paying.
I mean, I'm equally guilty. I approved your request, so, you know, what was I doing?
Yeah, you're going down with me.
Yeah. I have a real internet problem. Like, if I see a notification, it doesn't matter what I'm doing. You know, I could be, like, in the middle of, like, you know, saving a child from a burning building, but if I see that notification, I gotta just be like, all right, I gotta clear it. It's not even that I have to do anything to it. I don't like seeing that little number there. It's actually a mental problem that I have.
You have those people that post something in Facebook groups where they're like, oh, I was having a conversation with a friend, and I was bringing them towards liberty, and then you see that they have, like, an email icon that's got, like, 30 emails, and they're like, do not check your email. Please fix that before you post stuff. That's so annoying. But anyway, back to serious topics. So, like, you kind of touched on it earlier, like, with messaging, and sometimes I'll talk to libertarians outside of Facebook, and they just decide to say, oh, libertarians don't have a messaging problem. Then you go to, it seems like the vast majority of libertarians exist on Facebook, and then they'll tell you there's a messaging problem. What do you think, Mark?
Well, I guess it all depends on how you define messaging problem, because we have to, again, to analyze whether we have a messaging problem, we have to, you know, have agreement on what we're messaging for. So you have to think, what's the goal? Now, to some people, the goal is to grow a party, to grow this libertarian party, and that is the specific goal. Well, if that's the case, you know, there's a lot of ways you can take your messaging, because if your goal is just growth, and who cares what the growth is based on? Well, maybe you do want someone like Gary Johnson because he, quote-unquote, appeals to people who are already mainstream believing, and he appeals to people who might be Bernie Sanders supporters but might get dejected when Hillary is a nominee. So if your goal is to just grow a party, well, we can take this in many directions. And I facetiously argued with someone, or not argued, but, you know, spoke in a fired up way. they were saying, well, you know, the reason we need Gary Johnson, and I know this question pertains to more the Libertarian Party, but just sort of an example, you know, we need Larry Johnson, we need Gary Johnson because he'll be a good messenger because he'll bring more people in, and he'll bring more people in and help grow the party. So And I said, well, then if you just want to get more votes, if the goal is more votes, then why wouldn't you nominate Mitt Romney for the, you know, the Libertarian nomination?
Yeah.
Because Mitt Romney could get more votes, I think. If you had Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, I'm betting that Mitt Romney as a Libertarian nominee would get more votes than Gary Johnson. But he was appalled by that. And I said, okay, well, you're appalled by that. So then clearly this isn't just about growing the party or growing more votes, because if that was the case, then there's a million people I can give you that will get more votes than Gary Johnson. So we have to decide what we're trying to message about. And, you know, yeah, even if a bunch of people come to vote for Gary Johnson because they just don't like, you know, they don't like Hillary Clinton or what have you, you know, just rejecting that other stuff and giving the Libertarian Party a vote to get to some, you know, magical number, it doesn't seem like a really solid way to actually grow a movement. It might be a way to grow a party, but that's not necessarily the same as growing a movement. To grow a movement, there has to be, like we said, a kind of a consistent, somewhat principled, agreed-upon basis for that movement. And if you're just kind of reaching out by not really caring about the core beliefs, well, then, you know, what is the messaging? What message are you trying to send that you want to grow a party? That's the only message that you're sending in that case. And I think that's and if that's the only message you end up sending, well, then how are you different than everybody else? How are you different than the Democrats or Republicans who also don't have principles that they stand by? Now, so I think it's very important to decide what you're trying to do. Now, I personally don't think we're going to see, like, a Libertarian president maybe ever. I mean, or somebody that even uses that label, and that might be totally fine. But I do think that these ideas can get into the mainstream in many ways, and we're seeing it in real life all the time. We're seeing it by the fact that the marijuana legalization movement is just sweeping the country. Drugs are being decriminalized on state levels in many ways. These are the kind of things you can focus on, and you don't necessarily need to get any specific person elected to do it. So, you know, people will say, well, there's no other path to liberty except growing the Libertarian Party. We can't do that unless we, you know, have Gary Johnson. This is basically the argument I'll hear. And I don't mean to harp on Gary Johnson, really. It just seems to kind of be what came up and what people have been talking about lately. But, you know, Gary Johnson seems like a great guy. He probably is a million times better than any Democrat or Republican that might run. But we have to be asking ourselves, what's the goal here? What's the purpose? Is it just getting more people, you know, to happen to click a button at a voting booth and then never think about things again? Or is it to actually inspire people, to actually get people thinking about ideas in a different way? And I think you probably guess which one I would choose.
Yeah, I mean, Ron Paul didn't run as a libertarian at first. He ran in the Republican primaries, and he's probably brought a lot more people to the movement than people just deciding they'll settle for Gary on the as the third party. So you basically, Ron Paul kind of brought you into the movement. Are there any, you know, kind of niche things in terms of libertarianism that that's kind of your special interest? Do you like reading about, you know, the history, or are you an economics guy, or both? You know, we tend to like to devour all kinds of information as much as we can, just our ability. And how active are you kind of on social media, and besides in the Lions of Liberty group, what kind of stuff do you pursue in your spare time that relates to liberty that you like to, you know, read about or study?
Yeah, you know, when I first started getting into this stuff, obviously Ron Paul is a big fan of, you know, Mises and the Austrian economist, and he's always pointing people towards that stuff. And when I first, you know, when he first ran and I started getting really, really hyper-libertarian, I guess you might say, I was really big into reading that stuff, and, you know, because it was interesting and whatever, but, yeah, that's, you can tell by the way I'm saying it how compelled I was. Interesting and whatever, but it's interesting for me, but you know, the further I've gotten down the line, the more I've kind of delved away from that stuff. Not that I don't think it's interesting or perhaps worth knowing, but you know, at the end of the day, I don't make arguments for liberty based on economics. I don't make arguments for liberty based on what might mathematically turn out best for people in any way, shape, or form. My arguments come simply from a philosophical standpoint and from a viewpoint of a belief in individual rights. And to me, that's A, it's easier to sell to people because I'm not really, you know, trying. I don't have to like explain six different economic theorems to break something down. I can just say, well, this is obviously wrong. You know, someone owns a plant and you're going to bust their door down with a SWAT team, throw them in behind bars, and put them in jail for 20 years and because they did nothing but have this plant. Okay, this is wrong. Like, so that's kind of the way I look at things more now. And then the war on drugs is probably the point that I'm the most passionate on, because to me it's there's a lot of issues that we argue about, you know, as libertarians. Minimum wage, like that'll be something somebody will post an article about the minimum wage, and you'll see a 70 comment Facebook thread about it. People getting so fired up about this and that, about the utility of a minimum wage and this and that. And I don't like to get in the weeds on topics like that, because to me they are kind of nuanced issues. I mean, yeah, at the black and white non-aggression principle view, yeah, minimum wage is wrong. I agree, it's wrong. Nobody should be forced to pay anyone a certain amount of money. The agreement should be between the employer and the employee. I totally agree with that. However, when you consider the sort of world that we live in now, we have an economy that is, it's very corporatized, it's very cartelized. Basically, a few corporations tend to run most industries in this country. And, we have patents, we have occupational licensing, we have many things that prevent people from actually earning their own wealth. So it's dangerous to kind of take stances that are firmly against the minimum wage, which I am firmly against it in theory, but it's not an issue I'm going to be out there harping on, because when you harp on that stuff, you kind of come across as just a right-wing Republican, and you don't really come across as taking a moral standpoint, even if you are, if this makes sense at all. But I'm more viewing things from how a random person viewing a conversation between libertarians might take things. And something like the minimum wage is nuanced, because there are legitimate reasons that people call for the minimum wage. Now, I'll disagree with the prescription, but I can still see that there are symptoms of a disease here, and that disease is sort of our crony capitalist system. I mean that's the disease, and that's why people are finding it hard to make their way, and one of the ways that they lash out against that is by calling for a minimum wage. But to me, I see no reason to focus on that when there is something like a war on drugs that is just so black and white. I mean, it's just the most black and white moral issue I can even comprehend, where you have some people that are harming nobody. They simply own a substance or a plant or trade it with somebody else, and then we violently, intrude upon their lives because some people have decided that those certain substances are bad or evil or immoral or what have you. So for me, I'd much rather focus on the black and white stuff, the stuff that is just truly an injustice that I can point to, as opposed to, doing an economic breakdown of the minimum wage laws or something like that, if that makes sense to you guys.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I fall into that trap oftentimes. I found that I really have had to move into the, I am very, very passionately strong in the anti-war kind of train of thought. I love listening to Scott Horton's show, and he needs to get his show back on iTunes, by the way. But
I've had him on the show a couple times. He's just mind blowing to talk to, because once you can just give him a key word and he can just talk for an hour on it and never get boring. Is the thing, because he just knows so much.
Oh yeah, he just knows everything. And once you know that kind of stuff and how that kind of stuff's going on in the world and how we're invading and occupying countries and supporting other countries to occupy other countries, you kind of feel less likely to want to get into a debate on say sugar subsidies. There are bigger things to worry about. If the big thing is I want to share out a bunch of anti-war stuff, because not only that, but I feel like we have a really strong opportunity to reach out into to our generation or my generation, the younger people, and they tend to be very anti-war and very anti-war on drugs. So I feel like if we can get them on those issues and show them how the common sense and even the moral argument works for that, you can they'll kind of come back to you for other things instead of just leading and, like you said, always having a super strong, your one big thing is the minimum wage, because that does, and from their perspective, and it just plays right into the Huffington Post and Salon's hand to say, well, we just hate poor people. Exactly. They're all paid for by the Koch brothers.
And look, and I might understand the argument, and I don't even have a problem with having the discussion, but it's just not what you might want to put out there as your big thing. You might want to put out, and that's a way to reach out to people. Whereas, we say, oh, we need Gary Johnson because he reaches out to Bernie Sanders supporters. Okay, but I can boldly stand against the war on drugs and also reach out to a lot of people who happen to be Bernie Sanders supporters, and I can do it in a way that it in no way conflicts with my actual beliefs.
Yeah, I bet Ron Paul brought in a lot more traditional left-leaning voters or young people because of a strong anti-war on drugs and anti-war standpoint than Gary Johnson ever would. Because, you know, I wrote this in an article on LouRockwell.com the other day. It was about how the left, how some of the young people on the left are starting to see the writing on the wall that Bernie's going to get basically the convention stolen from him or the nomination stolen from him, even if he, you know, does get the popular vote to win it. It's rigged for Hillary with superdelegates and everything. But they've seen the writing on the wall, and they're beginning to attach themselves to Hillary just to spite Trump or whoever the Republican is. And, you know, they're not as easily dissatisfied, I guess, with the people in charge. The people on the Republican Party seem to be a little bit more individualistic and willing to break away. But, man, the young Democrats, they're just always willing to stand up against the Republican or the person on the right, and they don't. It seems to me that someone who's going to take a big stand against war and against the war on drugs and go really hard for it is going to have a bigger chance breaking those kids away from settling for Hillary, who's even worse on both of those two topics, but they don't even realize it, than someone who's just going to be Gary. And you know, I didn't mean that in terms of like Gary Johnson, but just, you know, the boring person.
I agree completely. I mean, I think you're right about Ron Paul bringing in a lot of those left-leaning people, and I think we saw the evidence of it in the fact that many of those former Ron Paul supporters, especially when it came to the Iowa vote, many of those people ended up going out to vote for Bernie Sanders. Yeah. I mean, this is something I discussed with Matt Kibbe when I had him on the show. We were talking about, you know, why the Rand Paul campaign kind of fizzled out, and Matt even said, you know, he talked to a lot of people at Rand Paul rallies, and, you know, he, upon following up with a lot of those people, they didn't go and caucus for Rand, they actually ended up caucusing for Bernie. Well, I mean, that kind of tells you that they were originally attracted to Ron Paul. These are former, like, Ron Paul voters, a lot of them. So, you know, they might have been attracted to Ron Paul because of that bold anti-war and anti-drug war stance. And maybe that part of Bernie attracted them more than Rand Paul was able to do with his sort of wishy-washy stance in those areas. And Rand Paul's pretty good on certain things. He's pretty good on the war on drugs. He's pretty good on foreign wars compared to major Republicans. But he's not pretty good at firing people up about these things. And he's not pretty good about, you know, coming across as a big, bold sort of a arbiter of change like Bernie is able to come across as, regardless of, you know, how real that might be, you know, when it comes to it.
No, I think, well, I almost gave, like, Gary's campaign too much credit. I was like, well, maybe they were seeing the same thing that people who were all for Ron Paul are suddenly for Bernie Sanders. But then with coming out, how Gary did, sounding a little more progressive, he didn't really jump on the anti-war camp, like, whole thing. So maybe they weren't thinking about that tactic at all, because if you were to try to reach out to them, I think you would jump all over that anti-war thing because, yeah. If you want to reach out, that's probably the tax you want to use. So maybe I was about to just give them too much credit right then.
I mean, Gary Johnson kind of comes across to me as a nice guy who's basically a libertarian because he likes weed. And I'm not against being a libertarian because you like weed at all. But, you know, I think it shows in his lack of principles on other areas when you get down to it. You know, he just hasn't thought these things through, and that's just... I don't know why we keep getting back on this subject. Maybe because it's just been what's been talked about so much in the circles I'm running in on the internet lately. But, you know, it's not what I'm looking for in a messenger of liberty. I want someone who really is thinking deeply about the ideas. Because if we're not, like I said, if we're not having a somewhat of a principled discussion about this stuff, then, you know, then we're just flailing about building coalitions of what? Coalitions for what? And if we don't even know, then what are we doing? Just wasting our time.
Even though
it seems like, if you're going to build support for the war on drugs by just saying you have a support for weed, I don't know what kind of following you're going to get from that. You know, are the kids who are going to follow you and say your name, oh, Gary Johnson, you know, like, I've got nothing against people who smoke weed, but basically the stoner crowd, who if you just tell them something, they'll just kind of agree with you. They'll say, yeah, man, yeah, Gary Johnson, yeah. Or, you know, are you going to get into a bunch of the people who aren't really as afflicted by the war on drugs as you know, as some of the other inner city or poor neighborhoods are as affected by the dealing as some kid who just hears he wants free weed and may not even or can buy weed somewhere now or may not even show up to the polling booth just because he's got that attached. There's no principled stand against the war on drugs. You're just attracting maybe, you know, like Ayn Rand said, Republicans just want to smoke pot, but who knows?
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
And I often hear, like, in a lot of the Libertarian Party, you know, there's always this war between people who can't stand people who have a philosophical base, and maybe the Rothbardian people, whereas you get some of the people that come from the more maybe not as principled, where we're not exactly advocating, you know, if you want to be part of the Libertarian Party, you must sign this platform that says you have to adhere to the NAP, you know, right now, and you have to sign that dotted line, which that part never made sense, that you should, if you don't know what the NAP is, you shouldn't have to sign a pledge before you join the, like, Libertarian Party, because, I mean, if you're, like, somebody who is a disenfranchised Republican or Democrat, you wouldn't even know what the hell that is to join the party in the first place.
That pledge for joining the party is actually just, that's supposed to just be saying that, we basically agree we will not, it was basically when they formed the party to prove that they were not a subversive, violent group.
Yes,
trying
exactly.
Trying to take down the government of America, they had this pledge that basically just says, we are not using, we do not want to use aggression and, you know, physical tactics to, you know, push forward our political agenda. So that's really all that pledge means. But yeah, I mean, it's really a tough call because you want to have, you don't want to be seen as like having a nose in the air litmus test for someone coming into a movement, especially if someone says, you know, I like what you've been saying. I want to hear more. You don't want to be like, okay, but you need to answer these 11 questions exactly right, or else we can't go any further with this. At the same time, if you are building a movement, it does have to have some very strong basis of principles that we all agree on. So there is kind of a how do you sort that all out? And I don't know the answer, but yeah, I don't think that the 11 question questionnaire to you know, allow someone to even participate in the conversation is probably not the best way to go about it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've been really impressed with Peterson because I kind of had a knee-jerk reaction to him at first when he was first kind of starting running, because I kind of saw him as a little bit divisive, you know, because people always want to complain about, you know, purists, and they complain about everything, and they just want to bring other people down and correct everyone. But it's kind of like for every purist, there's also someone on the other side who's not a purist who's complaining about the purist too. And it kind of, at first it kind of seemed like Austin Peterson was part of it, but what really changed for me there was when he was talking on Dave Smith's show. I don't know if you heard that interview, but it was really kind of at the he seems to have toned down his trolling, and he's really trying to unify people now and put just the message forward and stop trying to get into all the little squabbles. And he's turning his nose at the Republicans and Democrats instead of at other libertarians now, and that's kind of what's changed my mind on him a little bit.
Yeah, I did hear him on Dave Smith, but what even turned me around even more was interviewing him on my own show, because I had him on a few weeks ago too, and you know, I had him on maybe 4 or 5 months before that. We were sort of debating the non-aggression principle and the concept of rights and stuff like that, and really trying to get into the weeds, and I actually think he brings a lot of good points up even on that. You know, even in the areas where we disagree, I think he actually brings up good points. He just does it in a way that pisses a lot of people off a lot of the times. But ironically, that's why people know his name. That's why he's gotten attention, because he knows how to do things in a way that garners attention, even if a lot of the attention might be negative at times. But, you know, when you actually get him down and he starts becoming, I guess, more of the real guy, not the guy just trying to poke people, you do get a sense that he really does believe in what he's doing, and he is well-versed in it. Now, that was my biggest criticism of Austin, is that he almost comes across too well-versed in the debates, so especially in the Stossel debate. He knows the material, but it's almost like he knows the material too well. You know, when he gives an answer, it's almost like, okay, I have to go back and cite page 52D with a Thomas Jefferson quote, so he turns his brain back to that and then spits it out. So that's my criticism of Peterson, and that's one of the reasons that John McAfee impressed me so much, is because he couldn't have come across more different in that sense. Like, he does not, I do not think John McAfee stayed up reading, Man, Economy, and State the night before the debate to get ready. I'm pretty sure he didn't.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm pretty sure all he did was roll out of bed and come to the debate. But that's why he comes across as real to me. He comes across as just sort of saying what he philosophically believes without having been indoctrinated by libertarians to get to that point. And I don't know why we keep focusing on the libertarian debate stuff, but that's why I keep bringing it for some reason. I guess that's what's been on my mind lately.
Well, there was a point in time where somebody was really annoyed in the Jason Stapleton group that we kept bringing up the debate, and they were freaking out because it was like, aren't you scared that socialism could be taking over America? And I was just like, oh, good Lord, we spent so many months, like, being angry about socialism. And yes, it's, like, you know, something that's real, but oh, my Lord. I'm like, we can go back to so many of the podcasts, even on Newborn Libertarian, where we discuss socialism in depth. It's not like we have forgotten. It's just, you know, finally we had a libertarian debate that was on TV. I even got my mom to sit down and watch it in my apartment. So it was pretty amazing. Huge. And my mom, like, her comment was like, wow, I'm surprised. She's like, I'm just happy that nobody fought. But she was really...
It was pretty cordial overall. I mean, especially compared to, you know, what we saw from the Republican debates the last 6 months or so.
She also thought it was... She was like, oh my God. She looked at me, she's like, did he just kiss him?
Happier times before McAfee declared he would never support the party if they elected Gary Johnson. But
yeah.
A few weeks before the kiss.
Yeah, and that's...
I think it's kind of fun to be a fly on the wall, just in the back room LP... kind of stuff that's going on. I'm just kind of a gossip, so I like knowing all the little political maneuverings behind the scenes, I guess, are kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, it's weird, because at the same time, I have this conflict, because it's all the inner backfighting and backstabbing is, like, what I hate about politics, in theory, but it's actually what I love about politics, too.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, as far as a TV reality show.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, I mean, it's like a train wreck. You don't want the train to wreck, but when it happens, you just got to stop and look. It's just it's so compelling.
Exactly, and unfortunately, the train is actually like our country, and our rights are what get wrecked often. But hey, if it's happening anyway, I'm still going to comment on it.
Yeah, it's just I guess that's the one thing about actually being a member of the Nevada Libertarian Party, because some of the people there are actually tuned in to some of the gossip, so I immediately go there and I'm like, so, can anybody tell me what's going on? And then I find out all the dirty, and I'm like, oh, that's just disgusting.
Now, they need, like, a libertarian TMZ, like, a legitimate, like, unabashed, unashamed gossip site. I guess that's kind of what the Libertarian Republic is, but...
And, oh God, but all the pop-ups, like, I can't even visit the site. I'm like, somebody give me a cached version of the website before you post any articles, because I really don't want to have to watch my pop-up blocker.
And
can't. It's just, ugh. But people are always like, I thought, you know, it's funny that they're shocked. They're like, I thought the Libertarian Party was supposed to be different. I'm like, did you know the Libertarian Party is filled with people, right? You do know that, right? Like.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people tend to forget that in any organization... it doesn't matter, you could all be fans of the same sports team, but if you try to plan a tailgate with 40 people, there's going to be arguments and conflicts over how many hot dogs there should be, how many, you know, how many chicken breasts there should be, and what sauces you should have. So it's going to be the same thing, no matter what, you know, what, especially in the political arena, where at the end of the day, even though, you know, you're libertarians and you want less government, you're still fighting for a seat of power, whether it's power in your party, power in the government, that's still what you're fighting over, and people are going to, you know, things are going to get hairy, I think, no matter what the ideological basis for this is, when you get into these conflicts, you know, the same kind of stuff is going to pop up, whether it's planning the tailgate or running for president.
All right, I'm going to pose a question to both you guys. This might be controversial, I've been saying it a lot, but I would really love for the Libertarian Party to stop using the GOP as a vehicle. Like, I feel like after they did what they did to Ron Paul, and basically making the Ron Paul rule to push him out, and we can try saying blaming Rand Paul for his lukewarm presidential run could be the reason why he wasn't successful. But at the same time, I feel like the left, yeah, they kind of laugh at libertarians, but I feel like the right also kind of laughs at libertarians, even though, you know, libertarians seem to think the right is our friend because we have some things in common, because, you know, they're supposed to be fiscally conservative, whereas if you look at the evidence, they are not. I mean, they did help push a gigantic budget bill through recently, but I really wish that people would stop thinking that the right is the perfect vehicle to push libertarianism, because I feel like if we start doing that, they'll expect libertarians to try to toe the party line. It's just not good anymore. And everybody said, well, the Libertarian Party is not a viable option, so until it's viable, we have to do it this way. However, if you're continually using something else to as a tool, then I mean, it's never going to be viable. If you don't put the effort in to make something else viable, you know, it's never going to be. You can't just say, oh, we'll wait for somebody else to do all the work, and then we'll jump on the bandwagon. No, you've got to start somewhere, and you got to take all of the negative impact until it grows, but you have to be there to make it grow and not just hang out on the sidelines and then jump on when somebody else is taking all the effort.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, to me, it's like if you're going to start a fire, like, I don't really care if you want to rub two sticks together to do it or if you just bring a flamethrower. And if we start the fire, then great. So I think that people should advance things in whatever, maybe whatever way is offers the least resistance, or maybe whatever way just makes the most sense to them. So, I mean, I think there should be libertarian Democrats, libertarian Republicans, libertarians,
yeah.
Libertarian Green Party people. I mean, I don't really care. Whatever might make sense in your particular circumstance, whatever gets that fire started for you, do it. You know, and it doesn't even need to be political. It could be doing some silly podcast or something. I heard some crazy folks out there are taking that route.
Yeah, those weirdos. I don't know why they do that.
Yeah, I think that with the Republican Party, I mean, if you have the ability to do it, go do it. I mean, just do as many things as possible, in my opinion, as you can do, and try to reach as many people as you can. But I feel like the GOP was a special kind of case for Ron Paul because they couldn't really out-primary him in his district. I mean, he delivered like a bunch of the people who lived there anyway. I mean, he was there for so long, it was kind of hard for the GOP to back anyone against him. But it's kind of different now. But by all means, if you can go that route and get in, do it. If you can do it through the Libertarian Party, do it. If you can do it through a podcast, do it. It's just don't restrict yourself, but don't waste too much time with something that's not working either. Or try something else. Don't just keep bashing your head at the wall again and again. Don't keep reinflating the bubble.
And it all comes back to, you know, what's working for you and what your goal is. If, you know, if you start a podcast and you're thrilled that if you know, 10 people listen to it, well, then keep doing it, you know? Or if you know that you need to do something different to get more people to listen to it, well, then pivot that way and do that. And same can apply whether it's a podcast, whether it's pursuing things politically, or whether it's, you know, writing a book, whatever it is. You know, the point is, know what you want to get out of it and you know, alter your course based on that. You know, no one can really tell you what that is.
Amen. Well, Christian, do you have any more questions?
No, not really. How often do you do your podcast, Mark? Because I have been listening to the last couple episodes. I was just wondering when they update. I could probably figure it out, but
sure. Yeah, let me. So as of right now, we have three shows a week total, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So if you subscribe to Lions of Liberty on iTunes, on Stitcher, or on YouTube too, you're going to get a show three times a week. So I do a show Monday and Wednesday. I produce two episodes of the Lions of Liberty podcast. I also, on Fridays, it's kind of a new spinoff. One of my colleagues, John Odermatt, he's one of the guys who founded the website with me. He hosts the weekly Felony Friday, which is a look at the broken criminal justice system. So he focuses specifically on those issues on Fridays. And you get two more earlier in the week from me. Sometimes it's an interview, like the ones we were talking about earlier. I had Ron Paul on recently. And then sometimes we just have roundtable discussions where we just sort of discuss the libertarian issues of the day. So we try to keep things interesting and try to do it in a way that hopefully is entertaining and keeps people coming back. That's the goal anyway.
Right on. Well, you did a good job of plugging everything, unless you left something out and you would like to add to that.
I probably left a bunch of stuff out, but you know, you can find everything at lionsofliberty.com. Find us on Facebook. Find us on Twitter. All the usual places. And if you want to join our private group and kind of you can see people call me right wing, call me a right wing statist, then you can come over to the Lions of Liberty forum. You can just search that in your little search bar on Facebook, and we'll let you right in.
Oh, but my favorite one was hearing somebody call you a shock jock. That was my favorite.
Yeah, that, you know what? The funny thing about that was actually confusion. That was somebody had posted a link to something, and they had mentioned Lions of Liberty and then posted a link, but the link was to something else. The link was actually to Christopher Cantwell. So
oh.
For a time being, the guy thought that I was Christopher Cantwell. So I can actually see now why he would actually call me a shock jock.
Oh, so like there's no way.
I don't understand that term.
Yeah. Oh my God!
Yeah,
for a minute you were confused with Chris Cantwell.
Yeah, and trust me, I've seen Chris Cantwell, and we couldn't look any more different.
You're.
I'm just gonna leave it at that.
Yeah, you're a much more attractive human being. You're pretty all right for a dude. You know.
I'm just saying he's bald and I got blue, beautiful flowing locks.
So. Yes, he does have beautiful flowing locks.
I wanted to mention your locks earlier, but I didn't know if it was appropriate.
Hey, it's perfectly appropriate.
I talked about eating a penis cake. Okay.
Exactly. I think we are well beyond what's appropriate.
All right. Well, then on that, if you want to add us on Twitter, it's at Newborn Liberty. You can email us at newbornlibertarian@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook. Just search out Newborn Libertarian. And we're on Stitcher. And we're also on iTunes. So if you guys can be nice and stop by iTunes and give us a rating and leave a comment. If you hate the podcast, could you at least tell us why and give some constructive criticism? And if you love the podcast, please tell us why. And then until next time, thank you for listening.